Disclaimer, during this episode, we will speak with two amazing people, a part of the LGBTQ+ community, Troy and Dez. They are asked questions about their life experiences with family, religion, and acceptance. Disruptive Innovation is a podcast that disrupts the status quo. Disrespect will not be tolerated. Thanks again to our special guests. This was an amazing and innovative episode. Enjoy and join the conversation on our Instagram at Disruptive Innovation Podcast. Thank you. What's up, Disruptive Innovation Podcast? It's Ashley Tajay.
Hey, Tribe. It's Miss Nikki in the building.
Yes, and we got two special guests.
So we're going to start yourself. With... Yes.
Right. Who are we going to start with?
Let's start with Troy Boulay. Let's start with our brother over here.
Okay, yes. Okay. What up, what up, what up? I'm in here.
Yes, Troy.
And we have a reoccurring guest. Please introduce yourself.
Hello, this is Desi Dez.
What's up?
Down here in Tennessee.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Chilling. Dez, you way down there.
I am. I'm surrounded by the challenged folks.
You in the same time zone?
It's good.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. East side. Yep.
Yeah. So we usually start our podcast off with like a little icebreaker, and it's always like a would you rather question. Lately, I've been asking some crazy ones, so here is the question for today. Would you rather abstain from alcohol or caffeine for the rest of your life?
Mm-mm. You're so easy for that.
No, yeah. I'm going to hard pass.
You got to choose one.
Yeah, this is not allowed here.
I'm gonna say caffeine only because at least that's not to take on too much like soda and stuff like that. I mean, I drink juice or whatever, which I'm sure has some levels in it. If it does, I don't know, but I can deal without the soda and the coffee. I'm not a coffee drinker, not none of that. So, but I need my licks.
There you go. See, and I said, you know what? I can do the same. I can get rid of the caffeine. Although I love coffee and I love tea, I need a drink every now and again. So I need it.
I feel like you came for my whole life. Like it's either coffee time or wine time. I eat too right now.
And you know what made me think of it is when we were drinking coffee. Like, the last time I talked to you, I was like, oh, I have a nice big cup of coffee. I was like, oh, I'm asking Nikki this.
Oh, you so evil.
Literally, she was coming for you.
That's what I'm. So I'm like addicted to caffeine. I drink coffee. I have pre-workouts. I do all that. But
dog.
But I can go natural and I can do like sea moss and I can do all the other things. I'm not giving up my alcohol. So that's the best one.
Because that crown though.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Crown. Oh man. And what about you, Dez? You gotta say something. You gotta give it something.
I will say I shoot. Yeah, I probably would give up the caffeine too. As long as my caffeine pills don't count. I know that's kind of cheating, but I get migraines. Thank you. I get migraines, so like I have to have it sometimes. But if I actually had a choice, I probably would go with the alcohol. I'm a whiskey kid, and I love whiskey. If y'all haven't had a gentleman buck, go and have B+.
What is that?
You're welcome.
Yeah, what is
that? It is. It's delicious. It's a ginger syrup, lemon, little soda.
Sounds
water.
Like tea.
It's. I mean, with whiskey, yes, but it's a little more gingery, and I love citrus and ginger, all that. I can all day. Okay. Just I eat lemons.
Oh wow!
So. Yeah, I'm that kid. yep, straight up.
Yo, that's funny.
This episode here, we are actually going to confront, I feel like, a very controversial topic, so to speak. The most of us here, we have four of us. In participation in this conversation, we have in some way, shape, or form been raised with God and or the church.
Okay.
And so most of you listen to us, you know that we've been raised in the church. We do have a relationship with God. And when we say God, we're talking about evangelical, baptized in the Spirit.
And Jesus. I'll be all ignorant here. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. So that's what we mean when we say that. So, you know, as we kind of go on our journey, we confront a lot of different things. And today what we're going to confront is, so we're going to talk about if you, you know, how, not if, well, we're going to say if, I guess, if and how you can maintain who you are, whether it be your sexuality, in this case, who you are within your sexuality and still maintain a relationship with God. Can they coincide? Do they coincide? How do they coincide? So a lot of this is going to be based on that. So if you're not interested in hearing that, check out now.
But it's about to get lit.
Yeah, no, for real. We're definitely going
to
get real.
We're about to go there. And that's facts.
We're all there.
So make all right, so you ready to jump into question number one?
Let's get it.
Okay, guys.
Here we go.
So question number one, when did you realize your sexual preference? So at what age were you aware of your sexual preference?
Like fully aware?
I guess you can start when you had
to be long-winded. I'm trying to be long-winded with this. So it's like...
Oh, girl, I'm long-winded too. This will be fun.
So it's kind of like... I always had like, I guess, a feminine touch. But I didn't really know, obviously, as a 5-6-year-old, I didn't really know what it was or whatever. Skipping ahead, you know, other stuff took place in between. But I can say that probably around 12, 13, because I used to walk to school. I walked to Poughkeepsie High School and walk to school with my friend in the morning. I would always get ready before him so I'd meet him at his house. And one day he answered the door. He was still in the shower. He answered the door in the towel. He was still wet. And I looked a little too long. we're talking about like 2002, 2003. That's when cornrows was still the shit, all of that. So I was like, okay. And then I kind of just explored that a little bit on my own, you know, use your imagination on that, if you will. And I was like, okay, it's lit. But at the same time, I lived a double life. Like, I had a girlfriend that during the day and was doing other things when I was by myself or with another guy, put it like that. But 16, my last girlfriend was at 16. So 16, I already knew what was up.
Got you. So, okay, two part. So 16 onward, you knew. When did you accept it? Like, when did you come into full acceptance of yourself? Ooh,
that's a good question.
I would say 80% of acceptance came at 21 when I added myself on Facebook and to my mother. Fully accepting did not happen probably until close. This will come back around to that whole in the church question. When we get to that one, I would love to give you my insight on that. But yes. I'll just say once I separated, and I wouldn't even say from church. I'll say from a specific institution. Those. Ashley, Nikki, you know what I'm talking about. From that environment, I was much more comfortable and better with myself.
Ooh. Wow. Okay. That's a good first question answer. Follow that up, Desiree.
Oh, yes. I got you. Okay. So I also grew up going to Christian school as a tiny person. So I grew up as a tomboy. I was always a tomboy. Like, seriously, first grade, kids were like, you know, boys would come up to me and be like, did you see what's going on in the boys' bathroom? I'd be like, no, man, I didn't see that shit at all. But people kept thinking it. And so I didn't think anything of it. I'm just a kid playing around. And then when I was 8, though, I realized that I wasn't like the other girls. Like, I wasn't putting up, like, posters on the wall of boys or swooning over stuff. I just knew something was different. So that was that. But when I was 16, and I mean, I hope there's no too close in this, but I had my my first wet dream.
Juicy.
About Salma Hayek.
Good choice! Mm-hmm.
About Salma Hayek, right? It was so good. I had just watched Fools Rush In. I fell asleep to that, and I woke up very stimulated, and then instantly very, very terrified and tried to pray the gay away. Ooh. So I went on... and Nick will know this. I went on for honestly a decade or so, just kind of not thinking about it. I just kept myself. I honestly kept busy, and all things that I believe were true. Like I did a lot of missionary work, outreach work. I was a youth leader, and then a youth pastor, and a missionary, and all the while just kind of hiding it. And believe it or not, Bible school is what helped me figure it out.
Really?
start accepting it. Yeah. When I really started studying it. And when you look at original wording and not just translations, it actually changes a lot. So in 2009, I moved from outside Chicago down here to Tennessee. And that removed me from all church, youth, like all of that world, that whole world. And that's when it really started to collide for me. And I actually did spend a lot of time praying and fasting about it because it freaked me out, actually, is what happened. Honestly, I know this is going to sound crazy to some people, but I really believe that God brought me to Knoxville, where I knew no one and nothing, so that I could come out and really just be my true self. So it changed everything, and God brought people to me to encourage me, but I think mostly just to love me for who I am, the way I am, and not nobody, right? No, like that's, yeah. So yeah, 16 is when I knew for sure, accepted for myself, like happily. I was probably 30.
Wow.
Yeah, 20, wow. 29, 30. And I didn't do anything. I didn't have any boyfriends either because Jesus helped me stay out of that rodeo too. So that was nice. so yeah, I didn't date. I didn't date anybody until I dated my quasi first girlfriend. Well, it's not quasi first girlfriend. And what's that? I guess 2011. So there you go. It was a process, I tell you what.
Okay. Question number two. How was that received by your family and or the elders that surrounded you at that time? So when you did accept your truth and you did become you did come out, how was that received?
You want to go first, bro?
I'll take it because it's real simple and short. Other than that particular institution,
oh, that's good.
I had no issues. None.
Oh,
parents, grandparents, great aunts, great uncles, whatever. I mean, my first boyfriend was in 2010. He came around that Thanksgiving, that Christmas, that whatever. And it was, oh, okay, what's your friend? Yeah.
See, and that's true love.
There you go.
Yeah.
No, so mine was received very interestingly. And by interestingly, I mean not great. My mom actually guessed because my mom and I are, we talk pretty regularly. It was just me and my mom growing up. And so she kind of guessed. I told her I was bi at first, you know, kind of ease her into it. You know what I mean? But 3 weeks later I was out at home and that's when I told her, I was like, no, I'm real gay, mom. I love you, but I'm so gay. And, they, and my grandma also kind of had a meltdown. They prayed and I now know that they went to support groups and you know the whole thing. My stepdad was actually very supportive, which is nice. Yeah, it was really good, and I think I very needed it and very God, so it was good. And then I had just told my family at this time, and then in here in Knoxville, obviously I'm in the community, the gay community here, and so I was totally out here and that was fine, but I didn't know anybody else anywhere else. So it made it, you know, kind of had that separation. So, my mom, accidentally outed me on Facebook.
Whoa.
when she tagged me in a post that was a person that was gay and prayed and got delivered from the gay. And so mom tagged me in that post saying, hoping my daughter can come to this too.
But did they really?
Yes. And so this actually does bring up an interesting perspective that I'm going to throw out there. What happened to the story of the lady in what my mother tagged me in was, she was healed from being raped as a child and God healed her from that. And then obviously healing from that released a lot of how she felt towards the, you know, towards male, and therefore it actually did heal her. And so I do actually believe that's a thing, that there are those that that are hurt, that do have walls that go up because of that hurt, and that can very much be one of them. But that is not everybody, and that is not me. I was never, praise God, I had never had to go through something like that. And for me, it was, honestly, God really turned it around. I actually, Nikki knows how I get all up in arms and impassioned about something, and then I write about it and I'll talk about it. And so I was actually able to write a very direct and gracious response to be able to really put it out there, but also present, really be able to present what's going on in me and how I got to where I was at. So, you know, God turned around and made it good, but no, she just put it out there for, and I was pleasantly surprised by the response that I got back from a lot of my friends, you know, in youth group, in all the places that I had been, even in Bible school. But I also got met with some, you know, obviously some opposition and people saying I was deceived and that, particularly actually a friend from Bible school. And the thing is that she came to me in love, which was really good. But she just said, you know, I don't agree with where you're at. And the thing that I struggle with is that you're going to be going around and telling people that this is okay and that God's okay with this. And I was like, well, then that makes us even, because you go around telling people that God's not. And I was a little in my feels at the time, but I also still very much feel that way, is that I think it's a bigger hindrance and divide. Because you can look at the fruit of these things. And I think that's where discernment is supposed to come in a bit. But the fact that us shunning and isolating and ceremonially praying people out, which is just so awesome. Sarcasm and super facetious right there, in case
people were pause sure. Some of that. But, I want you to hold some of that through some of these other questions, because I definitely want to get through some of these other questions with you guys. So pause on some of that.
Pause.
So as a whole, what would you say, like, how was it received by your family and your elders? I feel like you're saying you had a mixed reactions.
Yeah. Well, my family obviously reacted the way I said they did there. It took them, they probably didn't accept it and okay with me probably within the last 5 years, 3 to 5 years. I would say church-wise, I had been kicked out long before I came out, so that was cool. So that didn't, I'd already been hurt enough by the church, honestly, even before I came out. So, I'd already been kicked out.
Okay. And I was there for that, so I know. Okay, got you.
That's
going to lead me into question number 3. What experience, if any, do you have with losing people in your life? Is that a thing? Is it not a thing? Did you have any experience with that? What did that look like for you?
I mean, I don't mind to stab at it first, because it kind of goes with what I was just saying. But honestly, the girl that I talked to, we were actually really close during Bible school. And after that, I think I've heard from her twice since then. And that was almost 15 years ago.
Well, that's not too bad. I mean, you only lost one.
No, it was, and I didn't really talk to my family about real life, probably except for the last like 3 to 5 years too. So a little bit of distance, but not like losing. But it came kind of close, actually.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Troy?
As far as for losing people?
Tag.
I mean, like I said, Thank God that, you know, everyone that I had a relationship and a rapport with outside of the institution accepted me completely. And even some within, you know, this is a keynote. You know, I'm speaking to two of them.
Hello.
I will say that when I joined that institution at 16, I was in a really dark space. Not the darkest I've been in, but as a 16-year-old with no confidence, you know, no pride about himself. You know, and I found a group that, without outing myself, felt like accepted me. We're talking about, at this point now, I think I was 10th grade, so we're talking all the way to shortly after I graduated high school that I got ceremoniously kicked out. Losing, you know, four, just five, six people that were in my age group within, you know, 3, 4, 5 years of my age. And even some people that I looked at as a spiritual guide, a spiritual mother, father, however you want to put it. They spent 3 years telling me how much they love me and that they're there, watch me cry and be broken. And then the first moment you see a quote unquote ugliness about me, now you're getting to know the real Troy. This is what I struggle with, quote, this is what I battle with. And the first chance you guys get, you hit the eject button. Wow. Oh, that's too much. That's too much. And I went through a rejection stage of, oh my God, if these people that are of God don't love me or can't be around me, then I must be really that bad. And I struggled with that even when I had my relationship shortly thereafter. I must have really been that bad. And even the person I was dealing with at the particular time from 16 up until I got removed turned their back on me. And I get it, they chose a different path in life, but it was like, hey, you know, when I was getting the wolves and being told to not go here, not go here, I got ripped out of being a choir leader, a worship leader, a youth mentor. I got ripped out of all these things, and you're putting all these stipulations on me. What we shared for the past 3 years, whether it be on or off, and you never went to bat for me, not once. Not to say, ooh, I want to be in a relationship with him, but you know these people better than I do, and not once did you say, hey, let up a little bit. Hey, that's not fair. Hey, don't do that. Because what the church fails, fails to realize is that a lot of people come to church with that being their last hope. And if I was someone that was on the verge of jumping, they pushed me at that point.
That's a whole point.
For really real.
Yeah. Damn.
I dealt with that. And even up until recently, I would say within the last maybe 6 to 8 months, I've finally been able to release it completely. But even when I talk about it.
Wait. Pause for a second. You said in the last how many months?
6 to 8 months. And I'm 30.
Wow. So how long did that hang in there?
Okay, 11 years. We'll call it 11.
Okay, I just want to make note of that. 11 years.
We'll call it 11 years. And it wasn't nothing that anybody did to make me have a change of heart. It was within myself and within my own prayer closet, because regardless of where I go, I have God, and he's with me. And I would be blessed to the capacity that I'm blessed.
Yeah, sure.
If I didn't have that relationship, if I didn't have that rapport.
Yes.
I still had to say that I had to take a moment and really look around. Like, God has been blessing you with abundance tremendously. And how dare you think that you're anything less than deserving or anything less of his child because of what the next person has to say. Regardless of what their job is or where they go.
Yes.
That they're the same thing as you. And yeah, they might know your business, but trust me, they're going to pay for some of the things that they're working on and going through and doing themselves. So they're in the same boat as you, just with a different hat on.
Okay. Talk about it.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yes.
Wow.
There we go.
Yeah. So, fun little fact too. I'm just going to throw this out there. Part of my journey in that, I don't know if I'm going to get ahead of you, Nick. So you just let me know if I start. So, one of my moments of, so I came down from Chicago down here to Tennessee, and I actually, it's when I got my first tattoo, and it is a wax seal on my arm. And for those of us that are in the Bible, it is a Song of Solomon symbolism. Mm-hmm. And it was for me to remember that I am God's no matter what.
Amen.
And it doesn't matter what people say. And I had no idea how relevant that was until I got down to Tennessee and started processing all this stuff. And it really does blow me away. The judgment, just point blank, it is judgment. It is criticizing.
They won't call it that.
It's self-righteousness. And honestly, it is why I, good sir, am not healed from all of my church wounds yet. I have been working on them. But it's been a process, But a big part of my process was separating church from God. And while church, and that to me is also a heartbreaker because of how I grew up. But there's a very big difference between the institution of church and the Bible and the love of God.
Yes.
And it was, and for me mentally, it was having to separate those two so that, because, and the reason I was able to honestly do nothing with this for 15 years is one, because God took me all over the world doing all kinds of crazy cool stuff, but also realizing and having that relationship with God on my own that doesn't involve a lot of the church. And it had a lot to do with my friends, you know, Nikki being one of them, but a lot of, and Becky and people that are in my life from back then that know me for who I really am. One of the poignant things I remember is having to stand up and tell people, I am not different. I'm still me.
Right. Right. And
now you just know something else about me, but that about what I am. And that was a big differential for me too, is realizing that my sexuality is part of what I am, not who I am, even though it influences and helps shape who I am because that involves who
but
I am.
You know, that's the way I look at it. But like, I'm sorry, I didn't interject. I just look at it as,
oh, go ahead.
Do you like the color blue? I like red. Do you like Italian? I like Chinese. Okay. So now we can't be friends?
Right. Exactly right. Thank you. Yes.
The crazy thing,
breaking it down simple for the folks.
The crazy thing to me, like, I've gone through different phases in my life where I felt so far from God, and I've done so many different crazy things. And Desiree, you've been one of the people to pull me back into my relationship with God. At everybody in my life who looks like they're doing things the way that you should do them in the manner that you should do them, you're the one that pulls me back in. And if you were to look at that, how she's deceived or she whatever the heck ever, like, no,
yes,
like
I'm an abomination.
Yeah, it's crazy, like
down here it's an abomination.
You have one of the strongest relationships with God that I've ever seen in my entire life. So it's crazy to me. Crazy. All right, I'm gonna hop into question number 4. I feel like you guys have kind of already answered it, but I guess I'll kind of formally just put it out there. 4 and 5 kind of run into each other. Did that make you feel isolated? And did that, okay.
Yes.
So you felt isolated. In that isolation,
yes.
Did that draw you closer to God or not? Nah?
Yes.
Des, did you want to elaborate on that?
I can. Yes, because it involved me walking out my relationship with God on my own, and it, because it actually was matching up my life and what I lived and chose and, you know, centered myself on with what I was reading and studying and the relationship I lived with God. And so, yes, because it was me facing truths about my life. And I think that's something that the church doesn't.
Oh, wow. Oh. Okay.
For me, isolation, absolutely. I think like Nikki said, I had kind of already jumped into some of this. It was a huge, you know, for an institution to preach so much rejection, you know, you struggle with rejection, you struggle with God's love, and oh, relationship this, and he already loves you, so on. Like, you did a whole, you taught it well, but it's not being practiced. And so then for you, now when I say, hey, man, no more, now we're friends, and now it's all good. But then when I say, oh, when I bring a male with me to church that you recognize that wears jeans or might have, you know, so on and so forth, then it was the side eye, oh, hey, how you doing? Oh, all right.
Right.
And, you know, when I brought him to church, the first thing they did was say, hey, how you doing? Here's a Bible. It's nothing wrong with that, but hey, you know, how's it going? Do you read at home? Would you like one? Would, you know, can I give you this? Not, hey, how you doing? Here's a Bible. Like, damn, where you been? You should have been on this. Like, clearly you need one. Like, whoa. But I, you know, I'm on the soapbox here. Here I go. But anyway, to get back to the whole isolation point, I'll put it like this. It felt extremely isolated. It felt extremely unwanted, unloved, mm-hmm. rejected. Put all those mm-hmm. words, all those synonyms in a bucket, shake it around and pick one. Mm-hmm. I felt it.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and a tag on that, brother, I'm sure you'll feel this too, is that I spent my entire life investing in this. Nikki and I grew up in the church. I was baptized in that church. I've been going there since mm-hmm. I was 5 years mm-hmm. old. And we grew up there. And then that's a split. But then I was youth pastor over here. Then I was missionary over here. And I went to Bible school over here. And so when I do this one thing, and you say, nah, that's right. too much. Nah, that's not good enough.
Wow.
It also makes me feel like everything that I actually have spent my entire life doing to you is bullshit, is not enough. It isn't good enough because of one thing.
You know,
that you haven't even asked right. me about. You didn't talk to me at all.
I didn't.
You just so, oh,
no. I didn't look at it like that. But that's crazy.
But you know what,
that you bring up that point.
Mm-hmm. You know, that comes from our lack of understanding. I'm going to take, and jump with me if you're with me on this. I'm going to take some of my own responsibility and allowing that situation that to me, because I should have known better, and I should have known that who God was, and I shortchanged him. Never mind what the pastor and the administrators and the youth leader and the guy I was dealing with had thought. I shortchanged God, because at the baseline of it all, it goes back to him. Never mind what we're doing inside.
Yes.
What my pastor says I should do. Let's go back to what God says about me and what God says I should do. I lost mm-hmm. track of that.
Oh,
invested in those people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, is that we're also been taught our whole life that we're supposed to give, right? We're supposed to give to others, supposed to give to others. And I also felt like I had done that all my life. And I'm totally with you that it was, thankfully, it had, probably in my high school years, towards the middle to end of those, it had transitioned into truly being just me and God. And I felt like I was kind of I was going with my hair on fire, but like in a great way, right, with God. And I tell you what, God did it on purpose, because if it wasn't for that, if it wasn't for seeing God do stuff in my own life and the healing and fullness of God happening in my own life from things, I would have been an atheist. If it had solely rested on the church, I would be an atheist. And I want to also give that, though, with a grain of salt, is that we are all human and humans are flawed. And that's okay. The problem is that the church doesn't really want to acknowledge that. And we keep trying to put up, this facade that we're okay because God makes mm-hmm. everything all better again, when that's not what right. the Bible says. The Bible says you're going to go through a lot of shit, but I'm here for
regardless.
You. It'll be okay. And I have come to recently articulate that the fullness of God and us actually displaying the power of God is actually in us displaying our weakness, because then people see the healing that has happened mm-hmm. in us. And that's the power and the fullness of God. And I fully believe that I have a greater understanding of that also because of all of this that I've gone through. So it's a double-edged sword, because the truth often is, it's just hard to deal with some pruning sometimes. You know what I'm saying?
That's okay.
Wow. Damn. Like, I kind of feel like, again, like, I love that you guys, the discourse here is really good. Like, the conversation is really good, because as we're uncovering these questions, you guys have kind of already answered them. And I feel like anybody listening, or for me personally, I feel like I know the answer to this, but, how would you describe your relationship with God today? What does it look like?
Amazing.
How do you feel about it?
Yeah, best it's ever been.
Right on, Dave.
And I've done, yeah. And I won't lie. I've witnessed some really amazing stuff. God has done some crazy, amazing stuff in my life. Like the whole checks arriving in the mail from out of nowhere. I've seen food multiply when I was mm-hmm. in Africa. Like it's crazy stuff that doesn't make any sense without God. But truly, my relationship with God right now is truly the best it's ever been.
Wow.
And I've been out of the four walls of church for, gosh,
right,
long time.
Right.
I don't, Yeah, I'm gonna say what, Nick? I mean, 10+ Three. Years yep. for sure.
Same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Troy, you made a statement before we started recording, and it was, everything I prayed about in my teens, I have now. Like, that was such a powerful statement to me. I literally
it
down.
Is.
Like, Love he it. Said, I have it yes. in abundance. Like, when you say I'm living my best life, yeah. I'm really living my best life. Like, can yeah. you expound on that?
Absolutely. I remember I've always been almost, how can I put this? Like, I use this, and it's kind of current. I don't know if you guys seen it or not, but the Clark Sisters movie. Karen Clark Shear, being the youngest Clark, always was the shyest one, the most quiet one. I'm going to follow you. I'm going to do what you guys say to do. I don't want to be in the spotlight. Mm. Same exact person that you're talking to right now. It was more so I always knew what I felt I could do, but didn't have the confidence or the strength to say, you know, just to put myself out there. And I always prayed. I want the, you know, the nice car. I don't need to be rich, but I want to be comfortable. I want to live in the, you know, have a charismatic life, if you will. You know, look good. And coming up and through, I thought it would be fun. You know, I guess at that time at 16, you know, 14 years is pretty far up. But, you know, it's like pray to have a lot of the things that I have now. And I can say that going through then all the teachings and all the Bible studies and readings and worship sessions and everything else, I heard it and I could feel it in a moment. But in that time, I never felt like I could retain it. But then now at 30, I'm having conversations similar to what we're doing now. And I'm able to regurgitate a lot of the teachings because I'm not going to ever sit here and say that their lessons were off. It was just how they handled me physically. And so now at 30 years old, you know, I have younger guys that are underneath that have gone through, have been through, went through similar, you know, journeys. And I'm
talk about
able
it, bro.
To share my experiences, but also bring it back to where we should have all been brought back to and what God says, not what you want me to do. And I'm able to, and sometimes I surprise myself, and I will not claim this for my own reasons, but a lot of times I get on the soapbox and we're going, I'm not good for quoting the Bible, but I'm good for bringing up the lessons of what God says. And that to me, you guys ever seen any of Fantasia's concerts where she don't do a whole bunch of preaching, but she keeps it real, and that's how she draws people in. And I feel like I have a similar sense. And so I'm just grateful. I'm just so grateful that God is more real to me now than he's ever been. I talk to him more now than I ever have. I have such a reverence for him. Mm-hmm. And nothing was my own.
Yes.
I can't step outside and go to the mailbox and make it back while saying, God brought me back because I could have slipped on the steps and broke my neck. You know, and that's simplistic, but you get what I'm saying. Like, I bring it all back to thank you, God, because without I mean, I could do it without him, but it ain't gonna last. It ain't gonna hold. You know, don't get me started. Right. Don't get me started. But yeah, I'm good.
I like it.
It's a good soapbox. Yeah. I like it because I think we're two sides of the
same. That's why I invited you. Because
you guys look at you.
Absolutely.
she got plans, y'all. She got plans.
I had to flex real quick, you know what I'm saying?
Here we go.
You know. But that's, here we go. So, like, well, that was kind of a question just for you because I'm going to go off on the whole Bible school, how I discovered and came really okay with it and how it helped me come out. A Bible school helped me come out. And it was, it's really great. I don't know if you have questions that are going
to
lead us.
Right, I'm not trying to do too much because I don't want to.
I've read you my questions before we started recording here.
Exactly.
I'm just saying, you know.
Because I will go on this because I was, you know, I kind of, because Nick asked me a couple days ago when we did the last one or whatever. And I've been refreshing myself on a lot of the details of the teachings and the wording and the things that are, in my opinion, manipulated.
Okay, so
and
pause.
Used.
Pause right there. Pause right there. Because you
pause
are going into some other questions.
Pause.
So, all right.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So,
I knew it, see?
We can be judgment. Okay? how does, I guess, the way that people have dealt with you make you feel as just a person? Like, if you were going to be... I don't know, if you were going to relate it to just anybody can have this experience in any way, shape or form, right? How does it feel as a person to be dealt with that way? And do you deal with others in the way that you were dealt with? Like, hell do no. you make a habit of dealing with others?
Oh, okay. Fuck no.
Hell no.
Mm-hmm. No, no, no. That's horrible. That's terrible.
My response to that is simple. I do the exact opposite. And in the place that I'm at now, you guys, like, I'm so free of so much of that. I can say if any percentage of that still affects me today, I'd give it a good 6%. I mean, I don't carry that. I refuse to. I got tired of feeling like heavy, feeling low, feeling unwanted, feeling unloved, so on and so forth. That I just refuse, and I'm sorry that I don't have more to give on that. It's just that I just refuse. Anything that doesn't work, my program doesn't belong. So if that means you or the institution that you're in or whatever the case may be, I'm going to love you from the balcony. I see you. I care about you. I want you to do great. I just can't be down there on the forefront with you. But I'm going to love you from up here. I'm good. Mm-hmm. I'm good.
Dude, that's mad good. I'm still in that. Yeah. For real, for real.
There we go. I love that.
I will say, honestly, when you were talking about it before, Troy, but it's like I've lost count of the 10 plus years younger than me that I have mentored and helped with this, because the church
they
is
won't.
Sucking in this area. I'm just going to say they won't. They're terrible. And the thing is that the hard part for me is that they aren't looking at the fruit. We talk about discernment and praying and being in God's love. Well, what's the fruit of what you're doing?
Ooh, that's a good one.
What is the and I challenge, and honestly, every time I challenge Christians with this, they say, well, the Bible says, and then they walk off. And I'm like, okay, well, the Bible says a lot of stuff, and you don't want to actually the hard part for me is that it comes off as pride. And to me, it is actually very pharisaical. And I say that with all love that I can muster. But is that the fruit is depression, is shame, is guilt, is suicide, is rejection. And that's the fruit of what they are doing. Now, if you want to tell me where the Bible says to go and do that shit around earth, you let me know, because I haven't found it yet.
I mean, listen, that page got ripped out. We missed that page.
Yeah, we missed that page. And so, do you want me to go into like the actual words that are like the Greek and Hebrew?
You
words
can, if you listen, if you stuff? Feel like go with it, go with whatever you feel.
Okay. So so one of the things that kills me, just like if you want to keep it real basic, right? The Bible, the thing that it talks about the most, anybody else know?
Break it down. We listening.
The Bible talks about money the most. Not salvation, not the love of God, not the grace of God, money. And the thing is, and I believe that's because God knows what we deal with on earth, and he wants us to have that structure because all the things in the Bible have purpose. God's not just like, I am a dictator. You have these rules. Do what I say. That's not God. At least not the God that I know. It's that it all has purpose and plan. And so, for example, there's only 5, arguably 6 verses in the entire Bible that talk about homosexuality. The big one that gets everybody is first up in Leviticus. And the big, and that's where the abomination part is at,
man,
right?
Man, should I lie with man?
And,
yeah.
Yeah, you got it. And so the thing is, though, is that the actual word that's used there in Hebrew is tova. And tova, it can, and the beautiful thing, and I think it's on purpose, is that Greek, Hebrew, and Aramaic are the languages used in the Bible, and they are honestly not as specific as English is. And I believe that's very much on purpose. But tova,
I thought they were more specific.
They're not. So, for example, the word tova actually has up to 12 different English words that it could be. And of course, when King James was translating that first English translation of the Bible, he had an agenda. Sorry, not sorry, Catholic Church. Love you. There was an agenda. So, well, and that was the Church of England too. But it can be an abomination, but when you actually read it in the texts with everything else that is also considered an abomination, along with eating shellfish and pig and having mixed fabric and, you know, picking up sticks on Sabbath, those are all abominations. So selfish is an abomination, mm-hmm. eating selfish, wearing mixed fabrics, having sex with your wife while she's on her period, all abominations in Leviticus. And if you go a little, well, so that one is Tova, which is also actually, and which I think is a more accurate translation, if you will, is unclean. And because all of that Leviticus is about basically what the Israelites are supposed to do now that they're a new nation. It's like, hey, don't do all these things because if you, well, this is something we can now sympathize with. If you get disease and y'all get wiped out, it's going to be hard to be the nation for God. So don't die. So wash your hands. That's actually in Leviticus as well. Quarantine the sick. It's also in the Bible. It is. It really is. And so, so Tova, unclean. If you hop over to then the one that everyone gets all wrapped up in is the one that Paul talks about, obviously, in Corinthians and Romans, right? And those, now this is Greek, so I'm sorry to those of you that actually do this well. I'm going to say it horribly, but it's okay. So there's malakoi, which is male, and bed, which is obviously male in bed. That's the knowing that is supposed to be going on there. And then there's also, this is one I have a hard time with, arsenataka, which is also horribly wrong. I'm sorry. But those are the words for abomination that it's using. And it is also something that is uncustomary, unnatural culturally. It's actually very much talking about a cultural space. So when you go back to that time period, when obviously Roman Jesus walking the earth, all that good jazz, women were inferior, like in all the ways. Like the fact that Jesus and the apostles actually empowered women and said that they could lead churches, that was revolutionary. That's them being trailblazers and just blowing everybody's mind.
It's 2,000 years later and it's still revolutionary.
I know. That's the thing, right?
Okay.
Freaking crazy to me. And so the fact that, so when you break it down, it's about it being uncustomary. It also is specifically talking about what Paul is doing there is it being in the lust fashion. So when you're talking about homosexual relationships during the Roman times, one, the Romans were freaks. We're just going to say that. Orgies, gluttony. They literally had, vomitoriums, literally what it's called, a vomitorium. So they could stuff themselves, gorge themselves, go over here and puke, and then come back and keep eating. Like this is where the Romans were at, right? So orgies, but a lot of what homosexual relations meant, which was just sex, often sex with adolescent boys, and well, really just all the not good side of the things. It in no way, shape, or form resembled a committed loving relationship. So what's interesting too is that you'll notice in those places that it doesn't mention, well, Old Testament wise, when it doesn't mention, it only mentions men laying with men, also correlates to the masculinity, the patriarchy of the male society, that women are inferior. And so it's about actually men taking an inferior position as women versus, because it mentions nothing about women sleeping together in the Old Testament. When you come over to the New Testament, it actually says it in reference, but it's interesting that it talks about womankind, and it's again kind of inferring this dominance, also this lessening of yourself. And it doesn't match up with the love of God that I see that also comes through in the Bible, if that makes sense. So with these key points and being very, well, it's, you can argue that it is up for translation, which is why this controversy rages on. But I will also throw out that it's very easy for people to say when they don't actually have to deal with it. So
that's a whole
thing. That, yeah, because it's like you're dismissing something and you don't want to actually dig into it and look at it, because then you actually have to admit that, you know, you might be wrong.
Yeah, you are loaded over there.
Which,
I just want to see though. Yeah, this is why I had her come on here.
I really am because then it also and then I always, you know, the throwback of like all of us on this podcast, we would all still be slaves if it was
facts.
If I mean, just saying.
Hello.
Unfortunately,
you better say that. Though,
okay.
So I won't lie. Nikki and I had a conversation last week where honestly, I finally admitted that I was in a cult.
Girl, me too. It felt like.
I tell you what, it's not okay. but I feel like God's really bringing me out of that because I think it really comes down to seeking truth. And I think that's what has made it so authentic is that I know that God loves me and cares about me. I also know that God made me this way. And so the thing is that when there's something that I read that I don't understand or doesn't line up with the other things that God has told me, I study, I dig in, I want to know the truth. And to be honest with you, I am actually still open about this
topic. That's really dope. And that was going to be a question of mine. So I'm glad. Like, are you open to any form of change and, you know, changing your mentality or thought process?
As far as what?
What do you say?
About gay being wrong, honey, basically.
When I get off this podcast, my boyfriend is in the bedroom asleep. Who ain't?
Oh.
And so for me, it's that it's a very important differential to me that it's not who I am, it's what I am. And something that I also, and this is like my process of coming out is that I tell this to Nick all the time too, is that I believe that everything on earth is like a shadowy reflection so we can understand our relationship with God better, right? And that being the case, I whittled it all down to that if I am with another woman and I love her and I want to be committed to her and we are awesome partners in life, how is that not one representing who God is in his love, one? But two, because I got to that point, the last thing, and this is going to get a touchy subject, Nick, I probably need Kleenex, but it came down to, I do believe that we are meant to create life out of love because that's an experience that God wants us to have and understanding his love for us. And so for a long time, that was the last little, the last little thing that I was hanging my hat on is that obviously gay couples don't birth their own kids, right? And while I was doing this praying and fasting moment, Jesus hit me, or God hit me, whatever you want to say, brother, I'm dying. that what hit me is that there are plenty of one heterosexual couples that cannot have kids. But two, it doesn't mean that you can't have kids. And so the thing is for me is, and I started, and I always ask myself, I'm very out of the box. And I started asking myself the questions about how do we know that God's answer to us overpopulating the earth is not more gay couples?
Mm. Yo, when she said that, I was like, yeah, you got it. You got a point right there.
Like, and not to mention all of the orphans that we have.
Hello, talk about it. Somebody, like, adoption over here. Like hello.
Right.
Yeah. And I want to, and I'm just going to throw all the monkey wrenches at all of the people at once is that gay couples have a higher success rate of marriage. Their kids actually are more successful because they know that they are loved. And I will say this too, is that every gay couple that has children undyingly wants them because it costs tens of thousands of dollars along with years of planning for
us
to
have. Then you get to choose. Like for those of us, like even I'm considering adoption one day, choose. Like, how would that feel for a kid? Like, some parents are like, I birthed you. I mean, I want you. I get to get up and walk in here and say, not you.
Yeah.
I choose you.
To all the kids that feel,
yes.
To all the kids that feel unwanted and not chosen. I mean, I'm just,
Jump into that. Man, that's like healing just to hear that. Because a lot of times with adoption, what you deal with is rejection and not being enough and not feeling a space of home and always looking for your connection point. So kind of reminding yourself of the other side of that is that somebody actually chose you. That's mm-hmm. beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I think like it doesn't mm-hmm. matter what your parents look like. I mean, you know, even in my case, like it doesn't matter what my parents look like. We don't look the same. We don't have the same background. We don't have we're not the same, but the love there is translated. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yes. And that gave me the ability to be able to start my own family with my own kids with having love as the foundation, no matter what. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? So, yeah, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And so, and this for me, it comes back to mm-hmm. what is the fruit? Mm-hmm. Well, the fruit of gay couples and having kids and adopting them and loving them and giving them hope and life and love and security and all the good stuff that kids need versus y'all's ideology.
Good word.
Is that
good
word, the abomination?
Right. Somebody's story, right? Somebody's story. Like that to me is like the biggest thing that I'm kind of like
and
getting from
you. Testimony, y'all, if you want to get Jesus-y on it. There's the right. Christianese,
right.
If you will. We have our life testimony that stands up to all the bullshit. Sorry, not sorry, y'all. All the bullshit you all are saying that is against us.
Damn thing I'm saying on here.
Mm-mm, not a thing. I am loud and proud, bitches. Hello. Look out.
Don't actually say move around.
Yeah, move around.
All right, so let's get into some positive questions. During this time in your life where you were kind of discovering you and accepting who you were, what made you feel safe? Can you go back to some things that made you feel safe and made you feel okay to be vulnerable and to kind of take the next step?
Go for it, bro. I'm here from you. Shit,
honestly, it was getting in the community. Be real honest. It is people like, you know, the it was a couple of people from old school, like Nick, Becky, Liz, like people old days loving me for who I am. And
relationships that you had that accepted you. Okay.
Yes. Is encouraging, is nice. But honestly, when I was really figuring out my shit and coming out, it was getting in the community because it's, and you can back me up if you feel it, Troy, is that there is so much acceptance in the gay community. We do not care. I mean, gay boys care about fashion. That's a thing. But other than that, there's no, yes, most, touche. But aside from that, there's, especially you can tell there's baby gays that are coming out and figuring it out. And, you know, and I am very proud that I have picked up the nickname of Mama.
Yes!
And it makes, and I will say that there's a super huge positive from my experience is that I can see it on people. I'm very much an empath anyway, but it's like when I go, you know, when I go to my spot and I'm in the community and I'm with everybody and you get to see these young sprites coming in that are like, you can see her deer in the headlights trying to figure this out. Like, okay, where am I? Where do I go? How do I, I'm gay now. Can I be somewhere? It's like, you know, I kind of gravitate to them. I was like, hey, you know, just welcoming them, being aligned for them. Be like, hey, if you have any questions,
you can tell me. And you know what?
And I'm
going to apologize. And I interject a lot, but it's not with malice.
No. You're totally good. It's a conversation, bro.
What you represent, the same thing now. Don't you wish that you had somebody to jump in and intercept some of the bullshit back then? I am now. Don't get me twisted, but I'm just like, you know, dog. If I had somebody to hold my hand and say, "This is how it goes," even coming out of the acceptance part, to teach me how this works on the side of the tracks. Because, like I tell anybody, because somebody could look for gay guys. I'm not sure how it is for girls, guys, but for guys, it's like they put people who are ignorant, like one box where it's like,
oh yes,
every time we talk to me, it's yes, oh, bitch. Yeah. And there's levels to this shit. And it's like,
there's a whole subculture within the community.
Within the community. It's like, you know, I wish I had somebody to school me. And I didn't start getting my schooling around like 22, 23. But it's like, I wish that when I was coming up and really trying to discover it all, it was a new world, somebody held my hand and was like, well, let me show you over here. Well, let me show you this. Well, let me tell you about how this goes. I was with the blind leading the damn blind. Yes. and all of that. So what you're doing, Des, is so great. And I'm so, because if somebody's calling you mama, it's for real. So that means that they feel that love, they feel the guidance, right. They feel the support, they feel the protection, they feel the respect. And please continue to do that. I'm doing my best over here, but you're doing your thing. And shout out to you.
Back at you, bro. And you know what? This is where the village comes in. It takes the village to do that, right? And, you know, that's really where it's at. And I, you know, getting a little real on that note is that I absolutely wish that there was somebody when I was, you know, a teenager trying to figure this out. But also, yes, even if you want to go the route of just not telling me that there's something horribly wrong with me because I feel this way, that would be awesome.
That alone, just give me that.
Because that's real though. And I'm gonna get really open, really real with y'all. Is that so? I super love Jesus and have been in that world, obviously, as you can tell now, for all of my life. I was a virgin until I was 29.
Talk about it.
I know, right?
Oh.
And the thing is, though, is that I lost my virginity to a guy. Because I was trying to fix it. I thought that's I had powerful. To fix something.
Mm.
And fuck.
Come on.
It is, right?
I love
And that is very much, I would say, probably the root of my hurt and anger at the church is making me feel that way, making me feel that I had to do that with something that they said was such a prize gift to hold on to my virginity. Also, FYI to all the virgins out there, it is not that big of a deal. Please don't make it a bigger deal than it is. It's important. No, I don't. Clearly, I give no fucks. I'm already burning in hell with whoever else. With a glass of lemonade. Woo, Heller. Listen. Yeah. We can all go to Chick-fil-A.
I'm bringing the ice. Ain't no Chick-fil-A.
No, I know. That's going to be a slogan, Ashley. We can all go to Chick-fil-A.
Ain't no Chick-fil-A in hell. They don't even like us.
I always joke it's the hate sear on the chicken that makes it taste so good.
It's a little something extra they're putting on there. They cannot stand to us.
It's a little something extra. I know. But, they, you know, but it was such a hard thing because, one, I broke down. Because, and the thing is that when that happened, I obviously wasn't married. So I had sex outside of marriage. I was freaking out about losing my virginity, but also freaking out because at the time I was thinking that I'm trying to fix it, which for the record, y'all, and he was great. He was very understanding and we were really good friends actually still. But it lasted a grand total of 5 minutes because I sat up at the end of that bed and be like, damn, I'm so gay.
So
I went to the bathroom and had a nice day. But the thing is that that still wasn't enough for me because then after all that is when I really started praying into it and trying to figure it out. And really, because for me, it was very much a conflict of spiritual versus all the things that I'm feeling. And for those of you that don't know or haven't listened to the previous podcast, I'm a Cancer. I'm an empath. I have all the feelings to like what feels like 100 degrees. Yeah. And so the thing is that it was so conflicting. And I then went through this phase of, honestly, that's when I had my party phase. I won't even lie, is that I was trying to figure it out. And because I didn't have someone to come alongside me and say, maybe it's okay. You can breathe deep. You like women. God's great with that. Because another thing that also came to mind when I was processing all of this in the spiritual sense was that in heaven, genders aren't such a big deal. Also, we talk about people getting remarried and all this stuff. How's that going to sort itself out there? Like, gender in the spiritual world isn't. And so it's part of why I believe that it really is about the energy and the soul of people that connect, which also goes to my connecting points that we talked about the last episode too, about it's where you connect with people. And how is that not the most important part in having a meaningful partnership to now, navigate life
with? I don't know if I can ask the moderators a question. Nikki, Ashley, can I ask y'all?
Oh, get it.
piggybacking off of Dez and what she was saying, what she tried to do as far as, you know, sleeping with the guy and, you know, the ill success of it all. Dez, this is more so a question for them because you clearly put your stamp, you know, your standpoint on it.
Yeah, you're good. You're good.
Without ruffling some feathers, do you feel that that's a good, a remedy, a band-aid, because I have, and if you think closely, ruffling some feathers, there was some recent, shortly after I moved, that there was some recent decisions, so some big decisions made where, you know, well, I feel this way, but let me propose to this girl, let me marry this girl, let me procreate with this girl, let me do A, B, and C, X, Y, Z. But do you think that that eventually becomes like, you know, I say it says, you know, you take 21 days to create a habit. Do you think that's just a habit that was created? Do you think that it's more natural? Do you think that it was just a move to make to satisfy those around? Do you feel like that that solves all the issues? Okay. Do you think it goes away because, hey, you know, I know how to play football so long that now I'm the star quarterback?
That's a really good question. Ashley, I feel like you should answer that part.
So, like, when you start to, like, live your life for someone else, you'll never be happy. So just because on the outside, you might try to make something look a certain type of way, on the inside, we know that you're dying to live your truth. And I feel like when you start to make certain decisions to make other people happy, yourself happy, you will literally start to fall apart. And the only way that you could be able to bring it back together and to be honest and happy and live a good life is when you're true with yourself. You got to be true to yourself. I feel like when you start living for everybody else, it just ruins everything because then you're not doing what you really want to do.
Okay.
And those other people going to do what they want to do. So they might be telling you, no, this is what I want you to do. This is what I need you to do. This is what I want you to do. But you don't know what they're doing behind closed doors. That's why I feel like everybody needs
to just made me jump into the next space. Nikki, do you want to add something before I jump in this next spot?
All right. So for me, I think it kind of depends, right? Like I think it depends on where you are in your process. Like, is your truth solely that, let's say in this particular example, you want to be with a male and you're practicing or, you know, dealing with your life with a woman, or is your truth that you're bi? I think that there can be, like you said, there's layers to certain things. So for me, I do think that you can hold two things simultaneously and they can seem like maybe they don't coincide, but I do also believe that what you feed grows.
Okay.
So I'm not going to ever, I don't think that is fair to ever, I guess, discount somebody else's process because their process may not look like yours. Therefore, their outcome may not look like yours as well. I don't think that there's always one destination for everybody. Mm-hmm. So, and I think dealing with a lot of energy in a sense. So if you feed a certain energy, that energy will grow. And I don't think it necessarily has to, I guess, conflict with who you are, if that makes sense.
Okay. Now I'm gonna get a little bit into the scene, a little bit. Welcome to the scene, ladies and gentlemen. On this side of the tracks, it's kind of like, and it's almost, I don't know if it sounds, you know, contradictory or whatever the case may be, feel free to give me the word for it. But it's like, I've met guys that are tops. Do we all know what tops are? Do I need to educate the audience?
Yes, okay. I know.
Yes! Okay. So I've met guys who call themselves bisexual or they're tops. They, you know, they do all the penetrating, so on and so forth. On this side of the fence, it's more, I'm not going to use the word acceptable, but it's more believing that, okay, this guy's quote-unquote bisexual. Okay, cool. You know, he does poking to this one, poking to that one. Now, none of my side of the tracks, all my girls, that's what I call my guy gay friends, all my girls, if you're a bottom or you enjoy doing that, to me, it cancels everything out. Because it's like, it's one thing to enjoy penetration but not being penetrated and you're called, you know, you're bisexual, whatever the case may be. But once you know that you enjoy it all and you know that's what you like, to me, I find that I believe that you're always going to be shortchanged. And so for me, it's just kind of like going back to what Nikki said, it's like practicing or doing, or maybe Ashley said it, where you're practicing or doing what the masses feel that you should do. And even at, and at the bottom line, in my opinion, if this is something that you know that you low-key struggle with on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, however you want to put it, I feel like for myself, either with that, I would either be by myself. Mm-hmm. No, that'd probably be it. I don't feel like I could. I don't feel like I could drag in a woman and or children into my struggle, my battle, because we read in the news, we see it on the news, the newspapers, what have you, all the time. You got these political leaders, these pastors, these doctors, these whomever you have, you want to put it, and then you know, 30 years into the marriage, they wake up and say, "Oh, I want a divorce," and then tomorrow, leave.
Mm.
You know, and to me, it's more so about you feel like you're struggling with a lot. You feel like you're carrying a lot. Imagine how those people are going to feel that you brought into this. Imagine how that wife is going to feel. Imagine how those children are going to feel once they realize that 20 years, 25 years into their life, oh my God, who the hell is this? So I hear you, Nikki, saying that you can, you know, you can carry both, but I'm going to tell you, my experience, that desire to be with the same sex is really heavy. It's real, and, you know, in the same scenario, just, and this is, a lot of this conversation, I'm bringing up a whole bunch of the same pool of ingredients, if you will. It's all ties back to my upbringing within the church. It's that even plot twist, here we go. So even 8 years after removing myself from a particular situation, reach back out to this particular individual, just say, hey, how you doing? And about an hour in, it automatically went back to 2007, and we were back to
the
same old shit. And that's
just, ooh, baby.
Now, once upon a time, it was described as, well, you're not good for me. So from you, I've been removed from for 8 years, 9 years, bro. So what is it now? You've made all these changes. Kudos to you. I've been consistent since I left. And here I am just resurfacing back in your life. I'm now a guest star on your show saying, hey, how you doing? And automatically we're going back to season one and all of a sudden it's like nothing changed. That's a big deal for me. Now it's another thing if we're talking 8-10 years down the line and your whole situation has changed, your whole handle on the situation has changed. But 60 minutes in, without me doing anything, don't get it twisted. It's not even like I influence, don't get it twisted. It's that I got you on the hook already. And I ain't said nothing but, hey, how you doing? How's life? Oh, what are you doing right now? I'm having a regular conversation that I would have with anybody. What you doing right now? Oh, I'm about to eat. Oh, I'm about to get in the shower. And when I say, I'm done talking to you, I'm going to get in the shower, your response is, let me see. That further lets me know you didn't handle it as well as you thought you handled it. And that's okay. But all I'm saying
Go ahead. It's me. Go ahead, babe. It's Nick. Go ahead, Ash.
No. I didn't have nothing to say. I didn't hear what you said.
Dang. I forgot now.
that's the real end of that. It's just like, by all means, if you choose to practice, I'm gonna use that word, one particular lifestyle, one kind of way, do it all the way. Because what's gonna happen is just because I go away doesn't mean that it's gonna go away. And it's going to surface and it's going to manifest in another way that's other than me.
See,
go ahead.
Okay. I agree with you on that. And I think like what I was going to say is that's our like, and I'll say our, because I'll take on the identity of the church for this part of the conversation. Like that's our issue of not wanting to address what is happening with people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was going to chime in and say is that I don't think it's so much about kind of like what Nick was talking
You know
about.
Why I say that. So I'll just put it out there. Like, I feel like I can hold really two things at once. And if you can decode what I'm saying, then you know what I mean.
Get into it.
But, you know, that's just my stance. But, you know, it may be different for both. Okay.
Well, I think there's a very distinct difference between what Troy was talking about and what Nick was talking about. There's two scenarios because it really comes down to people living their truth, you know. And it sounds like the gentleman that you was talking to was not living his truth.
to say the least. But it's one thing also to like to go through the process, because honestly, it's really, really normal for people to, I'm going to say it for everybody, you know, to be like bi when you're figuring it out, because you know that obviously you're not just one set, but you're trying to figure it out. You're not sure. So be, who gives a fuck about labels? Like I will say that sometimes.
Yeah. But I agree. I agree with the, and with what you said, Troy, about the bi. Like, I think like, and I agree with you too, Nikki, to a certain extent. Like, I feel like you can want both. There's nothing wrong with wanting both, but I feel like one always overpowers the other. Like, there, you know, even if you dibble and dab, one, you could be like, no, I can live with this for the rest of my life, and I don't even got to go back over there. There, it's always one overpowers.
And for guys,
my opinion,
like I said, right? For guys, I can lay down with a girl all day, and I'm just using this as, I'll get it twisted for those who are listening. It's that I've met guys where, you know, they're dipping and dabbing or whatever case may be, but when it boils down to it, they're like, yeah, I enjoy this. But then there's a piece that's missing, and I'm not trying to get graphic on this podcast, but what I'm saying is that they miss what I can do for them. And so it's kind of like, it's hard to ignore. And like I said, going back to it, if this was something that you could live without, when you tapped back into me, you should have been able to live without it then. I don't want to sound like I don't believe in bisexuality, because I do. I definitely do. I just feel that there's degrees to it, and in degree, it kind of shifts. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a spectrum. Okay, we'll use numbers 1 through 5. Okay. Yeah. Now, if you're a guy and you enjoy, you know, penetrating anything that got 2 legs, you're somewhere between 1 and 4. But once you know that you enjoy the penetration, it becomes a 5 through 10 kind of thing for me.
Be honest. You got to be honest with yourself. Yeah. You got to be honest with the people around you. And if they can't respect it,
they didn't belong in the first place.
Around. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep.
And move around.
Real love is understanding.
That's it. It's a movement.
Y'all got an
hashtag move around.
Well, because I was kind of thinking about it, like, kind of on the topic of, I guess, the pull of attraction, I guess, is kind of where we're venturing into, and like where you feel that is. Don't get me wrong. Even as a teenager, despite being a virgin for a very long time, my sex drive was very functioning. To say, I was not exceptional in that sense. But the funny thing was, is I didn't realize, because, so this is where I feel, why I feel it was kind of cultish, is because it kind of just shut my brain off to all the things that I was feeling. And it makes me think of like the Book of Mormon play, you know, turn it off, and it's like, the church, it did. And I didn't realize, like, okay, so you know, like when you see someone you're really attracted to, and your body just gets heat all over, and you just, it's just good. I didn't know that was a thing until I let myself be attracted to the first person I really was. Yeah. But that's for real. Oh, I had no fucking clue.
You did?
I thought it was all Hollywood.
I remember the first time I seen Chris Brown when I was like, 6 or 7. I was like, ooh. Oh my God. What
you a baby. Like? That's right.
Yeah.
Not anymore, but it's
before the code. Before the code.
Yes, before
the ultimate lightning.
Right, you avoided a whole ass bullet with that one, darling. But the nice thing was is that I actually got to like date this girl that I felt that way about and wanted to be my first, which was really nice. So it. But it really, it honestly, especially now that I think about it, it's like, it's something that really rang true for me, is that that's not something that I innately have control over when I feel that way. But it's something that I was definitely feeling. Uh-huh. You know, I was definitely feeling it. And I don't know, it's just, it's so, there's so much more.
Mm.
Church puts you in a box. Mm-hmm. Right, because they say this is what God looks like, and this is what your journey is supposed to be like, because otherwise it's not not right. It's not enough. And I think a lot of us, I think particularly millennials, I'm an elder millennial for all of y'all that are listening, but we're sick of it. We're sick of the bullshit. We're sick of the 50s mentality of keep it all bottled up and don't say anything. And then we also get raked over the coals because we're expressing how we feel. And somehow other generations, like older generations particularly, take that as offensive. And it's just like, you literally told us, I mean, like, I don't know about you, my mom is awesome. And we have a great relationship now, and she is very loving and accepting. And I talk about my relationship with her now. Like, we have come so far. It's beautiful. It is. It's nice. But really loving and accepting people is the love of God.
It barely does it.
And the church doesn't do that enough because you don't give people the freedom that you gave us. It's really irritating to me. And it's crazy to me that they don't, that it's not seen how self-righteous it is. And I think it's because of that cultish mentality. You just think that it's the right thing to do. So you're merrily going along thinking you're believing and doing and kind of these convictions of what's really good for everybody else, but not seeing that what you're doing is you're trying to control and police people, which you have no right to do.
That's okay.
And all you're doing is hurting people.
Yes. So that's going to lead me into my final question for you guys. If you could leave people with one impression, what would that be? Or if you could leave people with one area in their lives when they approach this subject to change, what would that change look like?
Dez. Nah, I got a marinade on that one.
Oh, you go first.
That's a bomb question. You got my brain going. I've been drinking.
Ivan's ranking.
It is a bomb question. It's going to get really real in a minute. I would say.
I like that.
Dare to ask some of the hard questions. Because it's. You know that you're operating in a bit, at least for me personally. I know that I'm operating in pride when I'm not willing to ask
good one.
If I'm actually possibly wrong. And so if you're not willing to ask, hey, what if what I'm thinking is wrong? You're operating in pride and because the thing, and this has been my thing for honestly my entire life, and I'm very grateful for it, is that we believe that God is love and we believe that God is truth. And the church has become afraid of asking questions when it's actually the core of what Jesus and the Bible talk about. I mean, that's what they were doing when they would get together at temples and synagogues. That's why Jesus was able to walk in and just read passages of the Bible and be like, yeah, that's me, and dipset. And everybody's just like, wait, what? He just said he was the Son of God. Holy smokes. Like, and freak out. Is because what they were doing is reading passages and discussing it. And we have lost that in the church because now we have a talking head up at the front that translates everything for you and just kind of sit back and let it wash over you. And we are no longer seekers. And so that's my final thing is I challenge you to speak for yourself.
I really can't.
I like that.
Put any better verbiage to as a statement. I think that's a statement not only for the churchgoers. I think that's for anybody, whether you go to church, whether you pray to Buddha or whomever. I just think that these are all the taboo topics that get swept under the rug and ignored. And we talked about this earlier. You know, the church has a good habit of, you know, putting things in the closet. You know, no pun intended.
All the puns.
Here for it. And I'm grateful that those who will listen are taking notes and realizing that, you know, they're not by themselves and that a lot of us have this exact same struggle. That's, I don't know, you're from a can of paint. And you know, we have so many similarities just from this conversation, just from this topic. And imagine the amount of people, the magnitude that we can reach just with this conversation for those who hear it. And they might pass it on. you know,
talk about it.
You know, and hopefully these words fall on deaf ears, those that are, you know, ignorant or refuse to listen. Hopefully it touches at their heart strength and they can let them understand that just because you choose to, you know, to change your ways or your way of thinking or your way of teaching or to, and I use the term that they use, get with the times or whatever the case may be. I pray that they realize that they're going to have a better outcome and a better understanding and a better reaching. A lot of churches don't grow. A lot of them don't, you know, mm-hmm. Because somewhere along the line, they're not getting it right. In a particular institution that I'm referring to, they don't grow.
Mm.
They don't grow. Let's call it the number 30. And in 2008, they had 30 people. 2015, they got 30 people. It's just a different mixture of people.
Mm-hmm. Talk about it.
You know, and it's like, so, and my understanding, and I could be wrong, and God will deal with me in his own time if I am incorrect. But I feel like when it's not growing, you got to go back to the foundation and see where you went wrong.
Yes.
And the thing is, like, it's not the fact that it doesn't grow, because you'll get newcomers, but when you start doing things that are ill-intended or, you know, not necessarily pleasing to the masses, you're going to find that 1, week 2, ooh, week 3, what's this? I'm done.
Peace.
And when you find that you have the same 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 followers, and that's all you're getting, and every plus one that you get becomes a minus one, that says a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Mm-hmm. I wish I had a bomb machine.
You know, but I think Nikki, Ashley, I feel like you guys have hit on this, because this is such a broad topic and we can literally do this all night. Because it's like, that's the biggest thing with a lot of the homosexual LGBTQ plus community. Mm-hmm. A lot of our issues resonate from our upbringing in the church. A lot of our issues resonate from our aunts, our uncles, our grandpas, our grandmas that were so heavily in the church, Bible pushers. You know, you were at church Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday all day. And
mm-hmm.
Because a lot of my friends, you know, I can play as long as they know every word, they'll cry, they'll worship. But when it gets down to the intimacy of it, would you go back to church? Would you have a one-on-one with a pastor? Would you join the church again? A lot of them are deterred from doing that because of how they were handled.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Ooh, and that goes back to the vulnerable and exposed bit we talked about. Just saying.
I can't come to you with my bare naked self, and then as soon as you see my bare naked self, you close the door.
Right.
Talk about it.
Don't tell me, come as you are, and when I come, you want, you know, like,
oh, not like this. The other you. Give me the other you.
Yeah.
Not that part. You need to leave that one outside. Leave that bit outside. Everything else can come in. Mm-hmm.
But this was amazing.
Yes. I'm going to thank you both. For real. Mm-hmm. I'm going to close. So I like the way we ended it. Question, and there was one question I didn't ask you both, but I feel like I'm going to answer it in a sense for you, because I feel like it's important.
Okay.
That you know that you're seen.
Mm, I love
you. So my question was going to be, how do you continue to worship? But I feel like if you can't see that by now, you're willfully blind. So if you can't see that these two people right here are some of the most genuine, loving, thoughtful, loyal, amazing individuals that I've ever personally come into contact with.
Wow.
Then you're truly, truly blind. And to me, that is your worship, and all the other ways that you worship just add to it. So I just want to thank you both for trusting us and being open and being honest and being vulnerable with your journey. I honor you both. I love you both tremendously.
Yes.
Aw, thanks. I'm all soft and squishy.
It's like,
me too. Really, truly.
I don't know. Like, even when you mention those things, and Des, I'm going to speak for myself on this. It's like, even when you say those things, I always feel shortchanged when someone gives me a compliment or an honor or a praise like that, because it's like, I'm only doing what flows through my veins. I'm only doing what feels natural. None of it is ever a show. And I don't care if nobody ever sees any of the things that I do, hears any of the conversations that we have. If nobody listens to this podcast, it's the same thing. I can't be anything but Troy. At 30 years old, I better not be anything but Troy. And it's like the blinders came off. The puppet strings have come off, the training wheels have come off, and I'm so grateful that I'm in a place where I can stand on my own. And not one soul on this earth no pastor, nor worship leader, no nothing can deter my feelings, my insight, the love that I have for God. Because at the end of the day, if I had 10,000 tongues, I couldn't say thank you enough. And come on, he knows now. That.
Amen.
And he knows that.
He knows it.
Just as much as I'm saying, having a glass of liquor, just like the next person next door might be getting some coke, just gambling issue. Guess what? He loves y'all just like he loves me.
Right.
It might not be the ideal situation, but my heart says otherwise. My heart is completely for him. And therefore, I get to get the keys to the kingdom.
All right. Now.
There you go.
Yep, yep.
I loved it. This was perfect.
And on that note,
thank you so much. I feel warm and fuzzy.
All right, yes. Y'all. We're going to end it. Disruptive Innovation, yes. Tribe Talk, you heard it here. If you don't follow or like or subscribe, definitely please go to all of our channels. We are available on every single platform, whether you are an Apple user. And find us on iTunes via your podcast search. Please search Disruptive Innovation. We are on Spotify, and you can follow us on Instagram at Disruptive Innovation Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Peace, love, and happiness. Hashtag Tribe Talk.
Yes.
Hashtag Move Around.
Yes. Hashtag Move Around.
Hashtag You're Not Alone, ladies.